Gucci. Hey, y'all. Mike Missanelli. 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station. We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missanelli show. Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like the sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly, where Haiti's the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like an opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock ya.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Mike Missanelli Show. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm excited. I'm excited about the Eagles making the playoffs. I don't know if anybody else is excited as I am, but tonight is a must-win situation. And in a must-win situation, everybody should be invested in this game and take it one game at a time. I understand that's a cliche, but I want the Eagles to make the playoffs. I'm on the record already. I think it's better to make the playoffs than not make the playoffs. This is the Mike Missanelli Show. We broadcast from the Xfinity Studio only from Comcast. There's some people out there that aren't as excited about the Eagles making the playoffs because they think, and rightly so, that the Eagles really don't have that much of a chance to advance in the playoffs, which I agree with. I mean, they're a fragmented team, and they don't have the overall strength they had last year. Things just aren't working the same way. I get all that. But again, I'd like to see them make the playoffs and get on a national stage and extend the season at least one more week. Maybe you extend it 2 weeks. And you go, okay, well, then this season wasn't really that bad. It's not a Super Bowl year, but it's better than a team not making the playoffs, right? Can anybody put that on a platter or put them, you know, both scenarios on a platter and tell me that that's not a better scenario? That they make the playoffs, they get a chance to actually win a game in the playoffs? Let's look at the scenario, because the Minnesota Vikings complied yesterday. They lost, and a lot of people thought they would lose, so it was no big surprise. But here's the deal. The Eagles have to win all their games except the Rams. And they get to 9. And here's the scenario. The Vikings would have to lose 2 games. Now, they play the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle, and then they play the Bears. Now, the Bears haven't beat a winning team, so that game's a little iffier that they would lose to the Bears. But if they comply, they lose 2 games, and the Eagles would finish a 9-7 situation and would actually get the wild card. There's 2 ways they can get in. They can win the division if Dallas loses another game, but it looks like Dallas is on pace to go 10-6 and win the division. But if the Eagles win the rest of these games except for the Rams, Dallas loses a game that's unexpected, 9-7. They will have beaten Dallas in a tiebreaker, so they win the division that way, or they can actually get a wild card. It looks like Seattle right now is going to get the 5th spot. Right now, Washington's in the 6th spot. The Eagles could very easily get into that 6th spot. And it's okay to do that. Now, I was listening to some calls today. There are people that are actually, in my view, they're kind of rooting against it. I don't know what this mentality is. They're so aggravated and they're so offended on what the Eagles haven't done this year. They're actually rooting for them to lose. They're actually rooting for them not to be in the playoffs, which is a mentality I do not understand. Now, Tyrone, I want to play this call. Now, this guy is from Cherry Hill, Joe from Cherry Hill, right? It's Joe from Cherry Hill, and this was a call on the Midday Show, and I want you to absorb this now. This is an Eagle fan, well, a Philadelphia sports fan, and you can tell that he doesn't want them to get in the playoffs, and this is like the quintessential miserable, as I call it. The miserable Philadelphia sports fan is this guy right here.
But Joe in Cherry Hill joins us right now on The Fanatic. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, how you doing? Am I on right now?
You're on the air, buddy.
All right. Listen, man, you're getting so excited for a team that's still asleep. Like, what are they doing? What have they shown you? They haven't even scored a point in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want to get excited about that?
Well, I don't want to walk around scared of the Washington Redskins. I'm scared to get my hopes up.
It's like what Anthony just said. Like, I don't want to be down about this team. Like, I want to be positive.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There's no way I'm getting excited.
Yeah, you're real positive. Like, Monday Night Football, the Eagles are playing the Redskins, and they got a chance to jump in the driver's seat.
I'm telling you right now, if they don't score a point in the first quarter, I'm shutting off the game. I don't even.
All right, shut it off. I hope you shut it off, and then I hope they blitz them in the second, third, and fourth quarter.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So sit around, get your Netflix on, A Dog's Life.
All right. That's enough. All right, now that's an example of a miserable guy. Now, I know there are fans like this guy out here, and I hear it, and I go, Jesus, we're back to this old Philadelphia mindset where they fell short of my expectations, so screw them. I'm going to turn off the game in the first quarter if they don't score a point. Now, they have had trouble scoring in the first quarter. I think the last five games, they haven't scored a point in the five straight games, right? They haven't scored in the first quarter. I get that. But I have to, I'm laughing my rear end off over here at some of the negativity about not wanting them to get in the playoffs. Well, what have they shown you? What? They haven't shown you the same as they showed you last year. I get it. Well, I don't know how you could just sit here with the remaining games. There's actually an air of excitement. They're chasing something, right? They're chasing a playoff berth. I mean, that's better than not chasing anything, isn't it? Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, listen, I can go negative with the best of them. But in this particular situation, listen, if they lose to Washington tonight, it's over. You know it, right? So then we can stop it. But they're going to win this game, probably, and they're going to keep the season alive. And it's better to be chasing something, to have some incentive for the following week and go week to week and play this whole thing out. Yes, they're going to lose to the Rams. But other than that, they have a fighting chance to get into the playoffs in two ways. So, I mean, that's basically what I want to talk about tonight. I don't think they'll have a problem beating the Redskins. Now, I know I've said this before with other teams. But, you know, I have numbers to back this up with Colt McCoy. He's not a good quarterback. You know, teams don't rally behind Colt McCoy. That's why his winning percentage is like 28% when he has to start a game. And there's something to that. This guy does not lift up his team in any way. Now, the Eagles are... they're going to have a hard time probably running the football because the Redskins have a pretty good front seven. And Carson Wentz may get some pressure on him. And it would help if they opened the field and threw the ball long, at least tried to throw it long, because they haven't been doing that. And the, you know, their completion and how the yards per attempt is not as good as it should be, in my opinion. But the Eagles are an overall, in my opinion, better team than the Redskins at home as a 6-point favorite. They should win the game and keep the season alive. And isn't it about that at this point? If you can't have what you had last year, and last year was, you know, like one of those years that everything went right and they got on a roll and you knew they were a good team. This is not the same, but that doesn't mean that you have to bail out on a season because you're miserable that they're not the same as they were last year. I just don't get it. All right, so there's a lot of stuff to talk about today, and we're going to have a full show because we have a lot of guests on today. First of all, the Sixers have won four straight. We're going to have Brett Brown on at 3 o'clock. I know it's a Football Monday, previewing a Monday night football game. But we're going to talk to Brett because the Sixers have a significant game on Wednesday against Toronto. A big measuring stick game against Toronto, which right now, best team in the East, and arguably, you know, maybe they are Wednesday. Yeah, did I say tomorrow? Wednesday. Yeah, the game's Wednesday. Also, the Phils make a big deal. This guy's a very good player. Gene Segura is a very good player. That solidifies their shortstop situation, and it's a matter of Machado wants to play third base, or if he doesn't, you move away and you focus on Harper. So I think this is a major strike to the Phillies, man. They got rid of a salary and a position that it wasn't going to work out. If you're going to move Rhys Hoskins to first base, couldn't play Carlos Santana at third base. I said that from the jump. So they made a significant deal. And there's going to be a pitcher coming back. Got rid of the J.P. Crawford. So all the shortstop situation is settled. This guy's a very good player. Just kind of an average defensive player, but a very solid offensive player. And also the Flyers. They hired a new GM in a matter of a week. How about that? Fast action Flyers.
You know, it's the first time in 28 years the Flyers have a GM that's not a former Flyer.
Well, how about that? Isn't that something?
Yeah,
but they still have enough Flyers in the organization where it's not going to matter.
You don't know that.
Well, they're being run by an ex-Flyer. So, well, what difference does it make, really?
I hear you.
All right. Now, also, what else is going on? I guess that's about it. right? Okay, here are the guests we have today. We're going to have Brad at 3 o'clock. We're going to have Paul Hembo from ESPN. He's got the 5 stats that we're going to look for tonight's game. Brian Westbrook will chime in at 4 o'clock, and then Ron Jaworski at 5:10. So a full show today. 610-632-0975 is how you get in. And Joe from Cherry Hill, Joe, listen, if you want to call the show, I try to talk you down from a leg because you are a miserable dude. Mike Missanelli show right here, 97.5, the Fanatic NBC Sports Philadelphia. And joining us now, the head man of the Philadelphia 76ers on the Comcast Business Hotline, Brett Brown, joins us. Brett, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Good to talk to you. There are some people out there that have said they're anticipating Wednesday's game at Toronto more than they're anticipating an Eagle game. That's when you know you've really made inroads in this city.
Well, we're excited, too.
Is this a measuring stick game for you, or is it too early in the season for that?
No, I think it's an early days measuring stick. I think everybody is looking forward to going to Toronto to do what you said, to just sort of judge where we are at, albeit early. I personally do look at this as an early test.
Where are you now in your mind? Now, early on, I know the turnover thing bugged you. They're giving up a lot of points, especially in the first half. I think you've tightened that up a little bit. First of all, where are you? And second of all, how did you tighten that up?
I mean, I still think that it's in almost infant stages still. You know, we're looking at different rotations. We're experimenting with different things on offense and defense. The good news is we have been playing pretty good basketball and winning games. To your question of where we're at, in my head and in my heart and my gut feel more than anything, that we're still a ways away. And at times I feel a long ways away. But the good news is I see it. I feel like what we can be. And I think at the moment we're playing decent basketball.
Where are you taking this team to where you want them to be? What things are you looking forward to doing that they haven't been doing yet?
I mean, my first thought always goes to defense. I think that we can be an excellent defensive team with Joel Embiid on the court. We're the number one ranked defensive team in the NBA. When you look at what happens after that, integrating Ben with Jimmy Butler and looking at some different formations that we can, you know, try to improve when Joel is not on court defensively, that's the first thing. I think that any time we can talk about, you know, defensive rebounds and the connection with turnovers, those two areas have been haunting as it relates to just simply not getting the volume of shots. You know, some of the games we've lost, you look at the score sheet, and, you know, an opponent would have had 15, 18 more shots. And so those types of things first come to my mind.
Let's talk about Butler a little bit. I know it's got to be a comfort level to have a guy like that. He's such a solidifying element. But what has he – you're 8-2. It's still in the infancy stages. I think he's still trying to feel his way. Tell me about Jimmy Butler fitting in right now.
The first thing that – is most pleasing to me is his spirit. Like, he comes in and he's just highly competitive. You know, he's got a personality. He lets me coach him. You sit down and he gets it. Like, you have candid, real conversations, and he's trying to, you know, walk that line of fitting in and then putting his own thumbprint on the program. And, you know, a lot of times, Mike, I have to remind him to read his resume. You know, he really is trying in some ways too much, you know, to just fit in. And I say that with tremendous respect. And so when I look at sort of the person, the spirit, when I see the competitiveness, when you see, you know, bottom line is talent, it's a hell of a package to be brought into our program and the city. Like, I think he's a perfect fit for the city of Philadelphia.
You had no qualms the other night giving him the ball to create something. He created the 3-point shot, which he had replicated. Is that an easy decision for you in that situation? Because you have other options.
I wouldn't say it's an easy decision. It's one of the more blatant decisions to me. You know, you're either going to go to Joe or you're going to go to Jimmy. And then you got to make sure, you know, JJ's close by to, you know, probably reap the benefit of a quick double team on Joel. And then you got to do some things with Ben where he can sort of slash to the basket and, you know, maybe get a cheap offensive rebound. But putting Jimmy in that situation, really two nights in that situation in a row and having him deliver the way that he did is a fantastic introduction to our program.
You're talking to Brett Brown, the head coach of the Sixers, big game on Wednesday at Toronto. I want to talk about Ben, and I want to talk about your bench and other things. Regarding Ben, I love him. I love the way he plays. His game to me is captivating. He's one of the most interesting players in the league. But you know that I do Sports Talk Radio, and constantly people are calling it, why don't they make him shoot? Now, I want you to try to explain that, like, a coach really can't move his arms to shoot a basketball when he's on the floor. So how do you handle the fact that he just seems to be unwilling to take the jump shot and what your concerns are about that, if any?
I mean, my concerns aren't as significant as what you tell me the fans are. I'll lead off by saying that. I do get it. I think, and I said this often, and I'll say it again, that his jump shot is not going to define him. It is going to be required at some stage of his career, and it will most definitely be needed from time to time in the playoffs. How he has impacted the game lately with his defense and what he does in other areas at age 22 is really jaw-dropping. I think all of us maybe forget, you know, how young he is and really what he's been able to do on an NBA court being that young. The point of when will he be able to shoot a jump shot, I think it gets so unnecessary discussion. And I think the other parts of his game, the free throw, you know, my question is, like, how do we get to him to be a 75% free throw shooter? His ability to finish around the basket lately has been fantastic. Just look at his shooting percentage lately, and especially watch how he's locked in defensively. And so I hear the shot, I get it, but there are other areas that are more important to me right now.
No question about it. But I'm sure you guys encourage him to shoot the basketball. Why don't you think he's still unwilling to do it?
I think he feels like he can make an impact in other ways, that he can do other things. And, you know, I don't see hesitation. When I see him in practice situations, there are some times in a game that I do feel he could come to a jump shot and probably fire off some jump shots. And that's always on the table for him as a point guard, especially. And I think, like, if all of us really went into rewind mode and you really sort of studied Jason Kidd and Rajon Rondo and Derrick Rose and Pickham, you know, John Wall, all those point guards, and that's how we're playing him, that really came into the league, not really being known as a shooter. You will see similar things. This is not completely foreign. And if you studied Ben at LSU, none of us should be fully surprised. And so we all get hung up on this thing, and I think it grows to greater areas than maybe it needs to.
Brett, let's talk quickly about the Markelle Fultz situation. What do you know? What's the latest?
He's just, you know, continuing to see specialists, and when he's not doing that, he is with us. I believe soon, and I don't feel comfortable nominating a day or a date, that the club will make some level of an announcement. And in the meantime, you go into the gym, and last night he was with us, and, you know, tomorrow I will see him. At times you don't. And I think, like, this thing is still moving on, and soon I hope to be able, or Elton will be able, to share with the marketplace the results of some of the assessments.
Do you find it's like peculiar? It's almost like he's holding the team hostage in a way. And, you know, maybe that's too strong a word, but, the level of care that's gone on to this, I think, maybe distracts from what you're trying to do as a team. Do you feel that way?
I don't. I feel for the kid. I think there are times as the coach, you know, to have him in and out, there is a little bit of uncertainty, but, you know, luckily we got TJ that's been able to come in and do a good job when Markelle has not been available. In relation to, like, the inner sort of workings of a locker room and a team, the distractions, I think we've managed well in an insular type of way with the coaching staff, with the team. I get the marketplace and I get the fan base. I understand it, where they could find it curious and a distraction. But internally, I think we've managed it quite well, and I think so is he. Like if everybody were to sort of zoom in and look at him on a bench with his teammates and, you know, him coming out on the court, he's not looking at his sneakers. Like he's looking straight ahead. His shoulders are out. He's interacting with his teammates. And I think internally, all of us are doing a decent job of managing this.
There are a lot of people that don't think that he'll ever play again as a Sixer. Now, I know you discounted the story that his agent allegedly wanted some kind of a trade, but is it likely that he will play basketball in the NBA as a Sixer?
I completely think so. You know, and I mean this, I don't even go there. I understand to a point where somebody could write or say something that significant or to the magnitude that you just said, but I don't believe that to be true. I don't coach him or talk to him or talk to our team at all about that. My wish is what I've said is to just help him get back on a court. And you game like where we can use him right now. You know, we're a little bit thin on the bench, and we all can see where he can come back into this team and help us win games.
My last question is the bench now, because it does look a little thin as far as offensive input, maybe a defensive three. Would you like to add another wing to complete this team right now?
You know, Elton and I talk all the time, and there is zero doubt that this the growth of the team, the design of the team, is just continuing to be certainly scrutinized, discussed. Elton's been fantastic with me, just about feeling it. And, you know, when you look at Elton's playing background now with his role as a general manager, my conversations with him are fantastic because it's clean, it's to the point. We all feel, you know, where we want to end up, you know, in May and June, we hope, and what that's going to look like. And there are pieces that we feel like we need. The team is not complete. I'll leave that with Elton. But to date, you know, right now we have a 17-8 record. And you look at where we were last year, we're doing okay. And the introduction of Jimmy certainly helps.
Well, go ahead and get Trevor Ariza and make me happy, would you? All right.
You got good taste.
Brett, listen, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
All good, Mike. Thanks,
man. All right, there he is. Bye. Brett Brown, the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. B. West, how's Monday find you?
You know what? Monday is pretty doggone awesome. I'm excited about this game tonight. I got a renewed vigor for this football season because of what happened yesterday. And so I'm excited about the game.
All right, and what happened was the Vikings lost, right? So it keeps the wild card into play. And you can clearly see the finish line. All the Eagles have to do is comply with winning every game except the Rams. Right?
Yeah.
Well, Vikings have to lose two. The Eagles win everybody but against anybody but the Rams, and they're good.
That's right. And you know what? I'm not saying it's going to be easy, and I don't know that it's actually probable, but I think they have a chance. And here's how they can do it. It's all about their defense. And I know their defense has had some struggles. I think their defense has, you know, they've played much better than they have in the last couple of weeks. But they have to come to play. They have to turn it up just a bit. They have some leaders on that defensive side of the ball that have the ability to push the guys to a different level. Fletcher Cox, I think, Malcolm Jenkins, certainly. Both of those guys can lead this team. Some guys that's been there a long time. Guys that's played in the league a long time. Haloti Ngata, Chris Long. And they got to take it to a different level. And if they do that, and this offense finds its way somehow, then I think they have a chance of winning, you know, and at least making it interesting as we go down the stretch.
All right, let's talk about what the offense needs to do. Their front seven is pretty decent. They usually get some heat on the quarterback. Kerrigan's been a monster against the Eagles in the past. Their run defense has been lagging lately, though, so it looks like you can run the ball against them. Sproles is coming back, but Josh is banged up a little bit, Josh Adams. So how would you handle this offensive game plan?
You know, I know that Josh Adams is banged up a little bit, but I still believe that we have to find a way to get him the ball as much as his body can tolerate. He's been the sole guy on that team, especially in the backfield, that can consistently handle the load. I know that Corey Clement has been good in spot duty and spacing out his carries and his touches just a bit. And I wouldn't take him out of that role, because when I look back at last year, that's where Corey Clement strived at. He was really, really good at coming in, not being the every down back, but kind of the change of pace guy and getting it done. We saw last week him return to that role, and he looked healthy and he looked good doing it. And so I'm going to continue to ride with Josh Adams until he possibly can't go anymore. And, you know, I wouldn't be afraid to sprinkle in Darren Sproles. I don't know what we should expect from him, especially coming off of a long layoff and maybe not being in shape, not being in football shape for sure. But I think offensively, you continue to ride Adams. And then you got to – Carson Wentz, he has to have a day. And I'm not just talking about this game. He has to turn it up for the rest of the season. And that means getting everyone involved. And, you know, I read the article today about Zach Ertz and his, targets and things like that. And I went back. I looked at guys like Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees, different guys, even Baker Mayfield. And they spread the ball around. They get everybody involved. That makes the defense respect and have to play the entire field. That may be something that Carson Wentz needs to think about just a bit.
All right. We all know their struggles scoring in the first quarter. They haven't done it in the last five games. First of all, why do you think that is? And secondly, what would you do to fix it?
They're too conservative. They're too conservative early on in the game. I think they struggle to stay on the field. And, you know, it's weird because Carson, he really hasn't been a quarterback that starts fast as far as accuracy goes at all. And that surprises me. I think there's a lot of different reasons for that, his fundamentals being the number one reason. But they have to, take some chances. Why not go deep? I mean, there's been many times when we were playing Andy Reid said, we're going deep first play. No matter what, we're going deep. We rarely see that from Doug Peterson. Even I'm thinking back to a Mike Vick play down in Washington where Chip Kelly was a coach. They're going deep the first play. They got in the fight before the game, and DeSean Jackson, some of the guys in the secondary for the Redskins are going at it. And what did Chip Kelly turn around and do? And I think it's pretty sure it was Chip Kelly. It may have been Andy Reid right there at the end. He went deep that first play. And I think that's something that Doug has to start thinking about, going outside of his box. You know, there's some coaches that have been caught inside of the same box doing the same things over and over and over, and it's hard to be successful that way when you don't have the talent level to be better than the team across the field from you. So you have to take some chances. I don't see why Doug wouldn't take chances in this game, especially when you're playing against a team that doesn't have a bunch of weapons and you don't really fear that's going to score 30, 40 points. Why not take chances now? Hopefully that will open up things as you lead down the stretch of this season.
I'm watching a game last night, the Chargers and the Steelers, and I'm just fascinated by the Chargers. And I'm watching Keenan Allen, and he's catching everything, and it targeted him about 20 times. He had like 15 catches. Why is it so easy for the Chargers to get the ball to their premier receiver and so difficult for the Eagles to do it?
Well, there's a big difference between Keenan Allen and anyone on our team. And really, there's a difference between Mike Williams and Tyrell Williams than anybody on our team. Keenan Allen is big, he's physical, and he has speed. Now, Alshon's big and he's physical, but he just doesn't have speed. And the other part to that offense is there are plays that they say, we're going to throw the ball to Keenan Allen, go get open. And he's done that repeatedly, and that's the guy that you're looking for. In our offense, that guy that we're looking for repeatedly is Zach Ertz, a guy that's not going to get the yards after the catch, a guy that's not going to be that deep, deep threat that I think Keenan Allen and some of those both of the Williamses are for San Diego. It's a different philosophy, different thought process. Zach Ertz has a bunch of targets, 111 targets, and he's catching a lot of them. But because that's in the middle of the field and a lot more people in the middle of the field, and because Zach doesn't get a lot of the yards after the catch, now it doesn't look as explosive opposed to when you're throwing to Keenan Allen when he's 6'3", 6'4", and he runs a 4'4", and after he catches the ball, he's gone. And the offense looks a lot different. It really boils down to the weapons that you have there.
I wanted to ask you about Kareem Hunt, because the last time we had you on, it had just come down that the Chiefs wound up releasing him. And there are a lot of Eagle fans that are saying, sign him. Now, it's out of desperation, obviously. What is your stance on whether he gets back into the league? How soon? He's going to get another job somewhere. Somebody's going to take a chance on him. But what's the line of demarcation here? How much time has to go by? Or do you think some team is going to sign him right away?
You know, I think, truthfully, I think if any reasonable team considers signing Kareem Hunt right now, they would be mistaken. I just think that that's a terrible decision. It doesn't speak well to your PR elements, how important it is to for you to, you know, be out of the domestic violence type of thing. And that's something that was a big initiative for the NFL a couple years ago after the Ray Rice thing. I think it would be a terrible look for any team to even put in a claim on Kareem Hunt. One of the things that we didn't see from that interview on Sunday is that even after that issue that he had back in February, now he didn't receive the help that he obviously needed. He had another issue with the man at some point. He never received the help. One of the questions that Lisa Salter asked him was, "Have you received help?" His initial answer was yes, but then she said, "You know," she pressed him a little bit more, and he said, "Yes, I'm going to receive the help. I'm going to go find it. I'm going to look into it." You know, if you have those types of issues at that point, Andy Reid, the whole Kansas City environment, his agents, they owe it to the kid, Kareem Hunt, to get him help. He needs the help. And I think he made a lot of major mistakes along the way. A lot of other people have enabled the kid. And unfortunately, you know, he's paying the price for his own actions and, you know, some of the actions of others. And I think, you know, he has to do better. It's not in a good place. And I couldn't understand why a team would even consider signing him up, claiming him off of waivers before he goes and get the help that he sorely needs.
You know it's going to happen.
Mandatory.
Somebody's going to sign him.
There's no doubt. I mean, what happens in the NFL is all about money and winning games. That's what it's all about. And of course, someone's going to sign him, and they're going to come out and they're going to roll out the carpet and say, "Hey, we're going to get him the help that he needs. We know that he can help our team, but we're going to do all these different things." And hopefully, they will. I just think that I would have a problem with my organization that I ran and coming home at night, looking my wife in the face, looking my daughter in the face, and having that same guy on my team. It would just be hard for me at this point.
B. West, prediction tonight. What do you got?
You know, I think the Eagles play well. I still don't think they put up a bunch of points. I'm thinking, you know, they'll score 24 points, but I think their defense shows up. I think that having Tim Jernigan back means something to this defense. I think he brings a toughness element to this team. I think the defense plays much better. They slow down the offense. I mean, again, the Redskins don't have a bunch of weapons. I think Adrian Peterson gets stuffed by this offense, and Colt McCoy just can't get it done.
All right. Sounds good. B. West, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you.
Thank you.
There he is. Brian Westbrook checking in on a little Monday action brought to us by Visit Philly. Headed to the city for the game. And a lot of people are tonight, and you should have booked the Visit Philly overnight hotel package. You enjoy over $200 worth of free perks, including free parking. Find out more at visitphilly.com. That would have been cool, man. You get to book the hotel package, and a lot of people did. Take the subway in. You don't worry about parking, right? Free parking.